Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole. This is my podcast, so thank you for listening. Today on the podcast, I have a friend that I knew from high school. His name was currently Kevin Gilmartin. I haven't seen him in a while because he works abroad. So I was very fortunate to be able to talk to him because there was a small window that he was stateside. That's cool to say, stateside. Anyway, but I'm not talking to myself right now, which I'm normally doing when I'm doing the introduction, because I'm sitting with Mustafa Elagar, because Kevin's interview ran a bit short. It was around 50 minutes or so. So I asked my friend Mustafa Elagar, who's been on the podcast before, to come and say a few words and do the introduction with me.
Hey, Joe.
What's up?
Nothing. It's good to be here.
So when I'm done talking with Stav, we'll go to my conversation with Kev. So yeah, but the reason I wanted to have Stav on, Stav, I don't need to speak as if you're not here. The reason I'm having you on is because, and I've said this to you, not with microphones in front of our faces while they are recording. The reason I'm having you on is because I gave you the green light to come on and talk whenever you felt as if you wanted to or didn't want to, with me commanding you to, like a situation like this where I kind of need you to, because you are a person who is actively trying to better yourself and is constantly trying to learn and listen to podcasts to try to broaden your mind and figure out the best way to be a human being in this world.
Yeah. Well, I just want to start off by saying thank you. I feel like you just talk anything out with anybody, you feel better about it, and then you almost understand your own thought process better. Mm-hmm. So to do it over these very nice microphones on your awesome podcast is a blessing. So
oh, you're thanks. Too kind. And yeah, that was a big reason I wanted to do this podcast was because of conversations that I would have with you and all our other friends where I was like, this should be recorded. Yeah. No one knows that people our age, 22-year-old kids, are talking about these types of things. I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but like in saying that we know so much and that we need to make our ideas go out there so everyone can listen to, but just from the standpoint of that we're trying.
Yeah, I think, right? It's kind of like... you know, a parent whose son or daughter hasn't gotten a job yet or whatever, but they're okay with it because they're still, at least they're trying.
Yeah.
Job, right? and we, I guess, need to let society know that at least we're trying.
To better ourselves. Wait, I haven't told you this yet because I didn't see you this last night.
What?
Last night I was picking up food from the diner and there was a guy and I just was eavesdropping on his conversation and I picked up on it when he started saying, and now... they're doing it at Yale too.
Oh yeah.
Where people, they can't even say anything. It's like, yeah. It was this old guy, mid 60s, early 70s, and it's not good. It's not good that these kids like where they're censoring everything they say and everyone's so offended by everything they say. And I just went up to him and I literally tapped him on the shoulder and I was like, I apologize on behalf of my generation that there's like there's 5% of us. It's like maybe even less than 5% who took the coddling and the everybody gets a trophy type thing that is so synonymous with our generation and kind of employed that later in life as a mindset of nothing that anyone says can hurt me.
Yes, a safe space.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to
Yeah, that's, it. Yeah, wow. That's honestly a whole hour's worth of conversation.
Yes.
I think we want to stick to a less
lengthy. So the reason why I wanted to have you on is because just talk about anything. You're a person who's always trying to educate himself. So what have you been getting into recently?
Well, I think it's funny that you mentioned that I'm the kind of person who is continually trying to improve themselves, which, I mean, it's very nice for you to say, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of myself like that. Obviously, I'm not, this is no way me trying to sound self-righteous to say that, oh, I'm always trying to better myself. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're not, then you're not doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just my personal, thing to, in my own mind, and again, not to sound self-righteous, I feel miserable if I wake up tomorrow and I didn't learn something or know something the mm-hmm. day before. that I know that day now. If that makes sense.
Yes,
that was, very complicated. But so what I've been getting into now is just, I don't know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not like any sponsored content for yours. I was just reading a lot of books, and just, you know, trying to talk to a lot of older people and get perspectives. And what I've been delving into recently is a thing called being in the moment. And it's three words, but it's very complicated in my opinion. And even though it's very complicated, every single person I know for a fact knows or can at least relate to what that means. Mm-hmm. And if I can use an example, if you think about like sports and like basketball, mm-hmm. when LeBron's going off or Steph Curry is mm-hmm. hitting like threes from almost like mm-hmm. half court. Mm-hmm. And people are wondering like how are they having such hot streaks? And, mm-hmm. and like, you know, the announcers will say like, oh, he's on fire. He's mm-hmm. in the moment. Mm-hmm. He's in the zone. And to me, I personally realize that to be a resource, mm-hmm. is it something, if you're doing a lot better when you're in the moment mm-hmm. at what you want to do, then how the hell can I make it so that I can increase the time I'm in the moment and control when I want to be in the moment?
Mm-hmm. That's a thing I've heard. That's interesting that you related to sports, because I was listening to a podcast where the late great David Foster Wallace was author of mm-hmm. Infinite Jest, great author. He was talking about
a Russian name.
Yeah. He was
shout out to Sod.
Five people are gonna get that. He was talking about how he was an amateur tennis player. I mean, he was apparently pretty good, but the way he classified it was that he was decent by competitive standards. And he said the one thing that his coach said to him was that he had a bad head, that there's these professional athletes who have this ability to kind of like turn off their when you are about to take a foul shot, you think, oh, I'm gonna miss this.
Yes.
Oh, I'm gonna double fault on this serve. Right. And he was a person who was always in his head and wasn't able to do that.
Right.
And he kind of looked at it as like a type of ignorance. And is it like a stupid thing that they're kind of just like blindfully going through this? But it is an active, it's like in this movie, For the Love of the Game, Kevin Costner plays a pitcher and he says, clear the mechanism. And he surrounds
right.
out every, it's that kind of
right.
thing you're talking
right.
about.
It's just clearing your mind. But it's paradoxical, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. it's almost, if you're controlling when you're being in the moment, you almost need to think, you need to use your brain to get yourself there.
Right.
But you need to use your brain to get yourself to a place where you're not using your brain in
yeah.
that way.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you're still using your brain. It's almost, like to me, and I could be wrong, I'm not a scientist, it could be like a subconscious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to talk about is the value of in the moment and how it even relates to, I mean, I think it relates to like life in general, but I'm a salesperson. I'm in training right now, but to me, what I've been learning is sales is all about really listening to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you're having a 5-minute conversation with them, and you're trying to sell them something. A lot of people who aren't that exposed to what entails, will think that in sales, it's about how the salesperson can convince the customer to buy it by telling them about how great it is and kind of manipulating them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not being defensive. It's just that's not how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that you don't talk about the product and know how great it is, but it's not trying to impose, you know, the features and benefits of a product on a person. On the customer, it's about trying to listen to the customer and understand where his or her needs are and finding how you can relate his or her needs to the features that you have in your product.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you have to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And a salesperson who's unsuccessful will walk into a sales call with an agenda, be like, I need, let's say this iPhone is great. Why? Because it's touch, why? Because it's got a great camera. And I want to sell you this, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this like preconceived notion that I am going to talk about the camera on this phone.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not in the moment, then I'm thinking about the fact that, okay, after I introduce myself, I'm going to try to think about, I'm going to like bring up the phone and then I'm going to bring up the camera. And it's very methodical, which is fine. It's a good strategy, whatever. Mm-hmm. But let's say I ask you like, so Joe, like, what do you look for in a phone? How much do you value the camera on mm-hmm. it? and you go, oh, I don't care about the camera. I like to write the notes on my notepad, mm-hmm. and it's great to do it. Like I don't use a camera. I don't mm-hmm. care. Well, then I am like, then the salesperson, I'm shit out of luck. I have no idea where to go from there. And mm-hmm. that's when I freeze up and I fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm worrying too much about what I want to say instead of being in the moment mm-hmm. and just really listening mm-hmm. and just kind of naturally being able to respond to the things you're saying and find how this iPhone could be something that could be of use for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that kind of makes sense. I think it comes back to judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just bringing a whole new thing, but it's very related where if you could argue that what I just said right there, if a salesperson wants to sell an iPhone on its camera, it's a form of judgment because I'm putting an opinion thinking that you will want the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's a judgment. But if I erase that judgment and I come in to the sales call with no preconceived notion,
mm-hmm.
but not to say that I don't know my product very well and mm-hmm. I don't know all its features and benefits,
mm-hmm.
but I walk in and I understand your needs,
mm-hmm.
there's no judgment and there's no pressure almost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can listen to you and sell you. So this is why it's specifically very important for me to try to improve on this.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's with anything, like if you want to give a speech,
mm-hmm.
you get really nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because you're thinking about what you're going to say and you're thinking about how people are going to judge you if you're like going to be good or bad. And then that kind of like gets in your own head mm-hmm. and then you can't speak well.
Kind of worrying about the outcome before
exactly.
you're even doing it.
Exactly. Worrying about the future and the maybe even the past. Maybe you had a bad speech the other day
mm-hmm.
and you're coming in and saying, oh, is this going to happen to me again?
So this whole thing is like you're saying people normally measure what they do in life by the concept of time rather than the concept of, like yes. they relate it to things that have happened in the past or things that they think will happen in the future instead of just clearly being in the moment kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, not to say that obviously, like as humans, it's arguably our greatest advantage mm-hmm. amongst other species that we have the ability to judge based on past experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives us. That's what learning is,
mm-hmm.
right? And like remembering a memory and being able to formulate the experience and prevent maybe like a possible negative outcome in the future based on that past experience.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also like there's a balance.
Mm-hmm. So the way that we've talked about this in our everyday lives and related it to me is like talking to a girl at a party, or
yeah.
being social at a party.
Yeah, hell
yeah.
Or
I'm going into it thinking like, oh, I'm not good at small talk. We're not going to actually talk about anything. I kind of have to make fun of this girl like a little bit, but also be nice, but like not be too out in the open about what I want, but like not be too laid back where they think I don't care. And instead of just being in the moment of talking to the girl and not worrying about anything and just kind of doing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, because like if you think about like the line you want to drop on the girl, like the pickup line,
mm-hmm.
then you're not being in the moment. You're thinking about that line.
Mm-hmm.
And when you approach her, like you're becoming nervous because you're worried about the outcome of that. You're worried about like the nerves start to enter your mind and then you mm-hmm. freeze up because you try to plan it ahead. And I don't know, it's a paradox because like,
yeah, it is a paradox because, so this is a quote I've heard from Jerry Seinfeld, you know, Jerry Seinfeld. He said it to Gary Shandling. He said, once you're comfortable at the party, you won't be funny anymore. So it's kind of this thing where people,
yeah.
I relate that to people use their neuroses and rely on their neuroses to better themselves in the future. So it's like kind of this weird, like you said, paradox of trying to find the balance between making sure that we're not just going through life without preparing for anything, living life
yes.
completely extemporaneously and hoping things come to us like as we're doing them, but also not dreading and like kind of worrying too much about things that aren't actually happening.
Yes.
So that's what the paradox is.
It is. But to talk about the in the moment a little bit more, it's really just being in the present time in which you are in. And like what I mean by that is like So I heard on this one podcast, like this fundamental shift thing that I'm currently listening
Rob
to.
Rob Scott?
Yeah.
Give him props.
Yeah, Rob Scott. I mean, shout out to him. I mean, it's a perspective of his that I enjoy. But he's talking about, you know, if you're doing the dishes, I mean, you don't want to do it. No one wants to do the dishes. You know, you do the dishes and you're like rushing to do them, and it's like you're just throwing plates in the sink, like, or like in the scrub thing, and like you're just trying to move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to finish the chore so you can continue on with your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very stressful way to look at it. And it relates to being in the moment. Because just like thinking about the pickup line before talking to the girl and getting stressed out because you're thinking of the future and what you want to do, it's the same thing as you're rushing the dishes because you're thinking about what you want to do next and you don't want to be doing the dishes. But if you just like put yourself in the situation where you are washing dishes and you feel the fact that like you literally, I mean, he was saying like you feel your hand on the sponge against the plate and you just enjoy that. And it's I don't know, it's really hard to articulate, because I feel like anyone listening would just be like, what the hell does that mean, you know? And I get that. It's not worrying about, oh, I want to watch TV after, or I need to do my homework after. Not to say that it's not important. Of course you need to do your homework after, but don't worry about it. Not now. Just do what you're doing now, and that is washing dishes.
That's interesting, because like it kind of reminds me, and I think I've said this to you, I was listening to a Pete Holmes podcast and he quoted Ram Dass, and he said, there's a quote from Ram Dass that is, the degree to which we're pushing against anything is the degree to which we aren't free. So it's like, and he used as an example, and I'm not saying that we could relate to this, but he used an example of like, if he smokes marijuana and he goes to sleep and he's kind of like freaking out about how he's high and he like doesn't like it and he's trying to sleep. It isn't that the reason why he can't fall asleep is because he's high. It's because he's stressing about it so much and
he's
because he's thinking about it.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, I'm high, there's nothing I can do about this.
Yeah.
It isn't going to happen forever.
Let me be in the moment.
And he said once he had that mindset, he fell asleep right away.
And it's amazing. I mean, because it's...
It's a form of meditation.
It really is. And all this is really a form of meditation, but that's literally like a whole different conversation. And to be honest, like, it's not like I understand meditation well enough to try to like talk about it, because but in reality, the whole thing is that like it's all about a focus on mental like hygiene, mental health. And there's plenty of like TED Talks about that too. And it's so foreign to a lot of people because as a society, we don't really focus. And this is something that's very conventional now, that we have realized that there needs to be more focus on mental health. I mean, you see like mass shootings like occur very often, and people blame it on guns, but I think everyone can agree on that it's, at the end of the day, mental health. And I don't need to use an extreme like that to justify the need for mental health. But something I heard in a TED Talk, I wish I remembered the name of it, because I do want to give it credit. And I would be great if people listened to it, but it was a psychologist, and he was saying that 100 years ago, no one had any focus on physical hygiene. You know, in terms of like, you know, cleaning, like brushing your teeth, or you know, medicine to that point of like staying clean, like showering, all this stuff. There was no concentration on that. And through the decades, we have very much improved on our physical hygiene, and the quality of life has risen by over 50%. That's what he said. And he said, I believe that if we give mental hygiene the same focus we do with physical hygiene, that our quality of life will raise just as high as it did. And the beauty of that is it's understanding the ignorance of what we don't know. And that is, back 100 years ago, if you were trying to preach to people, hey, like, brush your teeth, put a Band-Aid on a cut, like, what are you doing? Shower every day, like, use soap, like, like, what, like, how could you, why are you eating a sandwich with your hands after you just, like, wiped your ass? Like, how have you not washed your hands yet? Now, if someone did that, you'd think they're crazy. If you said that to someone 100 years ago, they'd be like, they'd call you crazy. And so to understand that maybe we are in that gap now, but with mental hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, people, there are a lot of people right now trying to preach about meditation, trying to preach about, you know, like just focusing in on, like, your happiness and your ultimate, like, enjoyment of life, and not stressing out about things that really don't matter, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, a house bill is, of course, like, something that's real and troublesome if you can't pay it. But in the grand scope of things, it's cliche to say, but it's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't fucking matter if you can't pay a house bill. I mean, of course, like, it's terrible. Like, your mortgage, you'll have bad credit and possibly go into foreclosure. But to think about those things is like, pretty much, I mean, this is, again, going to the TED Talk, like, if you can't pay the bill this month, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Now, it's about a forked road and deciding which path you want to take at that point. The one road is saying to yourself, okay, this is a situation that I'm in. Let me figure out a strategy, get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me figure out, maybe I can call a friend. Maybe I can go to a savings account that I have. Maybe I can save up and say, hey, like, give me a week and I'll pay it back, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's one option. The other option is to get that bill in the mail and realize you don't have enough money to pay it, and then freaking out because you're like, holy shit, like, if I don't pay it, then, you know, my house might go in foreclosure. I might have really bad credit. Like, we might lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extreme. But that's the point, because once you start thinking about those things, which aren't guaranteed to happen at all, you are bringing about you a lot of stress
mm-hmm.
that does two things. Is just generally bad for your health,
mm-hmm.
And will prevent you from having the clarity you need to figure out how to pay that goddamn bill.
Yeah.
And to go back to the first thing in terms of mental health, is the TED Talk referred to someone who is ruminating, and I didn't even really know what that meant, but that means to just kind of
overthink.
Yeah, the bad things. For someone to ruminate over something bad like that, like, let's say you went up to a girl and she, like, denied you, and you go home that night and you think about, holy shit, like, am I an ugly person, or do girls not like me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all those things. It's like when you have a cut on your arm and you find, and you take a knife on the kitchen table and you stab that cut and say, oh, like, maybe let's just stab this cut that I already have and see if it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously that's not gonna, mm-hmm. that's gonna make it worse. Why make something worse that mm-hmm. is already a bad situation?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all, and that all really comes back to just, you know, be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
sweat the small stuff.
Don't sweat the big stuff. I mean, don't sweat the small stuff. Don't sweat the big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a reality of, yeah, your house will go on foreclosure, and if you don't want to live on the streets, then you mm-hmm. do need to figure out a strategy on how to pay that bill. But it's all about keeping it in perspective.
It kind of ties into, like, not ignorance is bliss, because you can't, like, say for people to go through, like, their lives without worrying about anything completely and not completely disregarding the bad things. And, like, if you have a boss who, like, tells you this is what you need to
right.
focus on, like, or need to work on, it's not like you could just disregard that and think that, like, there isn't anything you've done in the past that's bad that you need to worry about. But it's, like we said, it's a paradox of needing to not stress out so much, not sweat things that you can't control, realizing it, understanding it, but not letting that prevent you from being in the moment of what's actually happening now.
Yes, yes. And I mean, you really don't have to worry about anything if you have the right mentality. And that goes into like two quick things, and I'll end with a story and then I'll be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that I heard someone say before, like, there are people in this world who, when something bad happens to them, they go, like, woe is me.
Woe is me.
Woe is me, as in, like, oh, like, how come this happened to me? Like, why me? Why didn't it happen to anyone else?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of bullshit that we are talking about, how bad that is for you. And there's other kind of people that when something bad happens to them, they look at it as a hurdle on a track, and
mm-hmm.
they immediately think, how could I get over it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could I jump this?
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about, oh, my God, this hurdle came in my way. Like, why me? No, mm-hmm. it came. Like, I can't control that. Now let's figure out how to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to say is, there was a great story that I heard. It's an allegory about having judgment on situations that happen to you.
A parable?
A parable, I guess. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
So relating back to this, like, this bill, this house bill, You get it. You don't know how to pay it back, and you're afraid that your house might go, whatever. So it might not necessarily be a bad thing. You just don't know the future. So the story is, there is a man. I said this to you the other day. Mm-hmm. There's a man. I think it might be like this ancient whatever, but there's a man. He has a ranch with like 100 horses, mm-hmm. and that is his life's assets. Mm-hmm. Like that's his work. Mm-hmm. That's his money. Mm-hmm. And one day the gate was left open. I think his son might have left it open, and all the horses ran away. Mm-hmm. And he lost everything pretty much. And mm-hmm. so his neighbor comes up to him and he says, "Wow, like all your horses ran away. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. That's a really bad thing. Like you just lost everything. That's bad." Mm-hmm. And the rancher, the man, goes, "Well, maybe." Mm-hmm. And a couple days later, all 100 of those horses that ran away find a wild horse and they come back to the ranch. So now the man went from having 100 horses to 200 horses, doubling his assets. So the neighbor comes up to the man. He's like, "Whoa, like now you have double the amount of assets you had. Like you have double amount of horses. That's great." And the guy, the rancher, goes, "Well, maybe." Next thing you know, the next day, while his son was tending to the horses, one of the wild horses ended up like back kicking the son and breaking his leg. The same neighbor comes up to him. I guess this guy's pretty nosy. Yeah. And he goes to the rancher, "Wow, like your son, like he has leg broken by the horse. That's a terrible thing." And rancher, as you would assume what I'm going to say, said, "Maybe." Mm-hmm. Soon enough, like a war breaks out and there's a draft. And this draft is basically, it's like imminent death if you're drafted in this, mm-hmm. in this war. But his son, didn't get drafted because his leg was broken. Mm-hmm. And so the neighbor again says, "Oh, that's great." And the rancher says, "Maybe." Mm-hmm. And that's the moral of the story is that like, don't put a judgment on the future outcome of a situation that's happening to you right now. Just focus on the right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, thank you. And that was Rob Scott. That's Rob Scott too, right? That you heard that from, and I'm sure he heard that from someone else.
I mean, he heard it from someone else and I got it from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Stav, I want to thank you because one, you're providing your voice to this thing and letting people be able to listen to it. But also, on a personal level, you and I think maybe I may do the same for you. But you constantly trying to better yourself and being interested in things rubs off on me and makes me realize how that's important and trying to better myself as well. So thank you for being my friend and for doing that for me as well.
Ditto to you, Joe. Thank you.
So, that's all we have from Mustafa. Like I said, I'm going to go to my conversation with Kevin Gilmartin. Kevin, like I said, very fortunate to talk to him. He was only back in New Jersey for a week. And prior to that, I hadn't seen him in a while. So it was nice to catch up with him, as you're going to hear. He's been all over the Middle East and Africa for work. So it was really cool to talk to him and hear about those experiences and hear something that... someone our age is doing that is very different than a lot of other people. So here's my talk with Kevin Gilmartin. Dude, I'm so happy to see you.
Chokehold, man.
Oh my God.
It's been too long.
We've, so I'm sitting here with Kevin Gilmartin, who I was a friend with in high school. I met him in high school. And I haven't seen you in while. We were just talking about that. When we didn't even know when was the last time. A year, over a year.
It's got to be a year and a half, maybe.
Yeah,
I'd say.
And you've been off doing some crazy stuff.
Been busy.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
Life goes on.
Because I just said you're doing crazy stuff. Where were you? How long have you been back in Jersey?
I love this. Is like perfect. Like I haven't even explained anything to you.
No.
This is great.
Yeah.
I've been in Jersey since about 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
So about 13, 14 days.
Yeah.
And then my flight's actually tomorrow. So.
So you're going back to. So where have you been?
To Nigeria. I've been recently.
Okay.
Yeah. So I leave tomorrow. My flight's at like 4:30, 4:40, something like that.
Yeah. That's where you were before that?
Yeah. So I've been in Nigeria since September of this year.
What are you doing there?
So, work
yeah
working for a company It's called Oxford Business Group.
Yeah.
We have these reports that we produce on different countries, mostly like emerging markets, so pretty much developing countries.
Wow.
And so I've been with them since last September 2014.
Yeah.
And so I've been in Qatar for a short like training period in the Gulf, kind of near Saudi. And then I was in Jordan for about 9 months for my first like assignment, my first like project for, I left there once the report was published, once we finished that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in September. I left Jordan. And then my next like project, my next assignment is Nigeria.
Wow.
So I'm there for about a year. So I'll be there probably until the end of the summer.
Wow. And then after that, you don't know.
I'm not sure.
It's up in the air.
Up in
so,
the air.
All right. So take me through the trajectory. You graduated college. You were in the grade ahead of me in college.
Right.
Well, let's go back a little. We can get to all that craziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not craziness in a negative way. Craziness in a good way.
Yeah.
So you were born, grew up in Quantico?
Born in Livingston, New Jersey. There's a hospital down there, but I didn't really grow up there. I grew up in Quantico all my life.
Yeah. So your dad was involved with things that gave you the ability to travel all the time, right?
Basically, my dad's a travel agent, which is, it's like a dying profession, you know, today with the internet and Orbitz and Kayak.
Oh, wow,
but,
I didn't realize that.
He keeps it going. The company was actually started by my mom's father. Back in like the 60s or the 70s. My dad took it over and it's been the family business ever since. So he's a travel agent, which is like the perfect job if you're a kid, because my dad gets pretty good deals and pretty good rates on different airfare and hotels and different things like that. So, it allowed me the opportunity to travel.
Yeah, I remember that was like, in high school, that was like one reason I was interested in hanging out with you. And I had never left the country at that point. I since have. I went to Mexico this summer for the first time I left the country.
How was it? Where'd you go?
We went to Riviera Maya.
Nice.
It was cool. It was a nice resort.
Beautiful, I bet.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Like,
it was crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so like, that's very atypical. I mean, before you even went into college, how many different countries? Uncountable, right?
I would say roughly in the ballpark of 25 or so, if I had to guess. I mean, growing up, we like usually every summer we would try and go to somewhere new. A lot of these places were like Western Europe, pretty traditional destinations, Caribbean.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. It was a fantastic way to kind of, it exposed my brother, my sister and I that there is like, a world beyond Pequannock. We all kind of have like an international angle in our job today. So I think like you said, like growing up, I think that kind of like, instilled something in us, maybe like an interest in the world.
As you were doing it, did you like realize, like as you were having those experiences at such a young age, did you know that it was different than everyone else and realize what you were getting out of it? Or was it only in retrospect looking at it?
100% retrospect. Honestly, like I didn't think twice of it growing up. This is just like what we were doing. And, it's not the kind of thing you think of, I guess, as a kid. But, subconsciously, I guess, it sparks like an interest in you.
Yeah.
I never thought that I would like try to involve like an international career in some regard until I was like probably sophomore year or junior year in college when I really started to like think about what do I want to actually do, That's just too big of a question for like high school me or anything like that,
It's too big of a question for current me. But looking back at it now, I guess, besides it instilling in you subconsciously, maybe that's what that area is something that you want to continue to do. Mm-hmm. What else do you think you got out of that? Besides obviously the exposure to different cultures and how other people live. Mm-hmm.
In general, I think living abroad is very valuable. I think you learn a lot about yourself when you're kind of thrown to the deep end and seen of what you're made of, So even plenty of people like study abroad, I think it's like one of the best things you can do, especially if you kind of go into a situation where you don't know everybody around you. You don't know where to go get milk or simple things like that. It kind of like puts you in this situation where you've got to really figure it out.
Yeah.
So
you don't have like the safety net of other people.
Right.
You don't have
that to fall back on.
Yeah.
You have to kind of like do it yourself and figure things out. Some things are simple, but other things, takes a little bit of thought and a little bit of coordination. But so I don't know. I like that aspect of travel and traveling abroad or living abroad, both things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It sees what you're made of a bit.
Yeah. So you went to Stonehill?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your major in college?
Economics and international studies.
Oh.
So double major. So
wow.
Perfect for what I'm doing right now.
I feel like.
I don't know. I liked international studies. I liked economics, but I studied international studies to travel and live abroad and to kind of like make sense of all these things that you read in a textbook or make all these sense of all these things you talk about in a class. So I feel like it provided me like a pretty good foundation for what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Going into college, you chose that major knowing that eventually you would want to work abroad?
After college?
No. I actually went into undergrad as an economics and psychology double major for a while. Actually, going back to Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote a really interesting book called like Blink. Mm-hmm. And there was another book by a different author called How We Decide that I had to read for like your freshman year book.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was about like kind of like behavioral economics and kind of like why do people make the decisions that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking maybe that could be an interesting field. You know, these mm-hmm. books, like I really thought they were cool.
Mm-hmm.
My brother had studied economics. So through just like conversations with him, I realized like how economics is involved in pretty much everything we do in the world.
Yeah.
So I feel like the two of those can be kind of an interesting combination.
Yeah.
But sophomore year, junior year, I wanted to study abroad. And then after coming back from abroad, I realized like I want to have, you know, some international spice to my life, you know?
Yeah. Where'd you study abroad in college?
In Rwanda.
Wow.
In East Africa.
So atypical.
Yeah. Non-traditional, but like.
Amazing, obviously.
Absolutely incredible place. Yeah.
Yeah. You've seen the movie Hotel Rwanda, I'm sure.
I did see it beforehand. Yep.
Use that as a little preface to.
You did? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rwanda is probably like my favorite country that I've been to, though, or lived in.
Oh, why is that?
It's a country with like an incredible story. Like 20 mm-hmm. years ago or so, they had the genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible, terrible tragedy. So many people lost their lives and so many like families were affected by it
mm-hmm.
just because it's a small country and a lot, like high percentage of the population was killed. But just seeing like going from that to 20 years later and where they are right now,
mm-hmm.
like it's just one of the most resilient people, incredible stories. Like everybody you meet in Rwanda has some personal connection to this awful, awful tragedy that happened.
Yeah.
And to see how far they've come in just 20 years, it's kind of remarkable. You know, it's a stable country now. Their economy is doing pretty well. So,
wow.
And that's kind of what my my program focused on, like post-genocide reconciliation, like after this massive tragedy where, you know, everybody, every single person in the country has a terrible story or a terrible, you know, awful, awful things happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where do you go from there? How do you bring a country together? Like, mm-hmm. and particularly like the role of the government in trying to like foster stability, bring people together to kind of move on from this terrible, terrible, terrible event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously like not easy, but it's fascinating the way they did it, you know? And I think that
the resilience.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the Rwandan people are so resilient. That's probably what I liked about it most.
That's awesome.
And it's a beautiful place. Absolutely gorgeous.
Oh yeah. What about like,
it's hilly.
I don't know anything about
it. It's called like the land of a thousand hills. It's like its little kind of motto.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like just these really tons and tons of hills, very green.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find like wildlife, like you think like Africa, you think like game animals, like giraffe, lions, elephants. You can find that in the eastern part of the country, but most of it is just these like gorgeous rolling hills.
Mm-hmm.
Very pretty.
So when you came back from there, that's what made you decide to switch your major to
international? I might have switched it beforehand,
yeah.
But that is when, like, that confirmed it for me.
Yeah,
that was,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was thinking about it, but, like, coming back from there, like, it really, you know, confirmed that this is, like, what I would like to do, somehow mm-hmm. involve travel, somehow involve, like, international mm-hmm. work in my career.
So this show is about people around our age at a very specific point in our lives mm-hmm. of post-college trying to figure it out. But I've also interviewed people in college still
mm-hmm.
because I like to get, it's millennials, just anyone.
Right, generation.
So for anyone who's like maybe still in college now or like out of college, how do you look at your college experience now in terms of like who you were then and like what it was like?
It's a tough question. I think like academically, I feel like I kind of came into myself in a bit in college. Like mm-hmm. high school is great. I feel like I didn't really like apply myself, so to speak,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
in
yeah.
college. I just kind of went through the motions, did fine and everything. But I took my academics relatively seriously at school, but I feel like it kind of opened up a few doors in terms of like making good relationships with certain professors, meeting people that kind of like convinced me that going to Rwanda would be a cool idea, could be something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's a journey, you know? Like I never really thought that like I'd be working where I am right now,
mm-hmm.
like going into my freshman year of college. So I mm-hmm. feel like, you know, my 4 years at Stonehill, I feel like I did come into myself in some ways,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. But I don't know, it's a journey, you know? So
yeah,
everybody's
yeah.
different. Everybody kind of has a different pace at which they're kind of like figuring it out, you know? And
mm-hmm.
I don't think I have it by any means figured it out. So
yeah,
it continues.
And you played soccer in college as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How was that of being an athlete?
I liked it, you know? Fantastic bunch of guys.
Yeah.
The same as like Veltri and Schumann that have been on this program. Like soccer's just such a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't like imagine not playing. I can't imagine my college experience not playing soccer.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a pretty central part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the team aspect. Like, you know, it goes beyond just like the practices and the games, but freshman year makes a big difference. Immediately having like 25, 30 guys that you can immediately kind of connect with and feel part of something, you know? Especially like the first semester, I think it's difficult for some people just because, you know, everybody is new, everybody's in the same boat. But if you're part of a team, it's right off the bat, you got 25, 30 people. But yeah, it was fantastic. I don't know. I really can't imagine any other way. Yeah. So
talking about feeling a part of something, something I've talked about before on the show, something I kind of experienced immediately after graduating college and being back here, and was kind of a, was the catalyst for me making the show, was it was kind of the first time in my life where I didn't feel a part of something and kind of felt disconnected from everyone else and wanted to use this as an outlet to, one, force people to hang out with me.
Which also, is working. I mean, I'm here.
Yeah. But also maybe put out there that I feel that way and make it okay for other people to feel that way.
Yeah.
Did you experience that at all? Or like, what? So right after college, what did you do?
Right after college, let me just say, side note here. Yeah. I think this podcast you're doing is fantastic. I think it's super, super cool idea. Thanks, you know, man. I mean, I know your interests. I know like what you're vaguely, what you're trying to get out of like your career. And I feel like this is a super cool thing to do for someone our age, you know. I think it's a great idea. But
thanks.
After school, I went to Washington, D.C. I had an internship, a summer internship with, it's called the Atlantic Council. It's like a foreign policy organization, a foreign policy think tank. And basically what they do is they have on their staff all these different experts for different areas of foreign policy. So they have like regional experts, people that focus on Africa, people that focus on Southeast Asia, Middle East. And they have all these experts here. And these experts, basically, they host a lot of events that brings together like policymakers, people from Congress, people from the Obama administration, foreign governments, like a lot of different leaders and different kind of people from ministries and departments of different foreign governments will come together as kind of like a place where you get all these experts to sit down in one place and talk about different issues to get different perspectives. So this particular organization had like an Africa Center, which is super small. It's like 4 or 5 full-time staff. And a very small organization. So I was an intern with this team. And basically, I kind of supported the senior staff with editing and writing and whatever kind of research initiatives that they had. So a lot of it was looking at like Boko Haram, this terrorist group in Nigeria. A few issues in Kenya I was looking at. But actually, the timing of my experience there worked out really great because that same summer, there was what's called like the U.S.-Africa Leader Summit. Like Obama invited, I think there were like 50-something African heads of state, African leaders that came to D.C. for this like 3-day event. So my organization, the Atlantic Council, hosted something like 10 or 11 events with like different African leaders and like these policy experts. So it was really like fantastic exposure to like, you know, the leading experts, the top-notch people that are making big decisions in Africa-related stuff.
Wow.
Which was fantastic for like what my interests were and what I was trying to do.
How did you have the confidence to just dive into that? Like what?
I don't know. It's if you have it, your interest, then I feel like, know, you just got to put yourself in the situation where you're surrounded by people who are smarter than you and who know it better than you. And that rubs off. Like, I don't know. I remember this like one particular moment where my immediate supervisor, this guy named Josh, I don't think it matters if I say his name, but fantastic writer. And I remember he was helping me out with a piece that I was writing. And he came over and he's like going through the paragraphs. He finds like this one sentence and he's like, he spends about like 10, 15 minutes on it. Just like changing the wording around different ways just so he gets it perfect. Just so he gets it the right way that he wants it. So just like things like that. Like that guy just takes his time when he's writing and like he will take his time to get the right wording sequence. So just like surrounding yourself with people like that is, I think, always like a fantastic idea if you're trying to really, you know, get your teeth into something.
And that was another reason I wanted to do this show, just to, because like, I feel this is something I've talked about. A lot of the times I can fall into feeding myself things that I'm interested in or only like taking in like things on my viewpoint. It's like what people do with like with politics where they like only, if Republicans only watch
Fox News.
It's like that kind of thing. And I was there's so many different, there's so many people my age are doing so many different things that like no one would normally think about. Like no one thinks that a 24-year-old kid, American kid is doing something like this. So I just wanted to show and also learn about. So
that's cool. Cause there's like so many million different routes that people are taking and you know, and it's cool to kind of like, even if it doesn't like that, oh, this is what I want to do after listening to this or talking to this kid, like I don't know. It's interesting to see like people's stories and what they're mm-hmm. at, where they're at, what they think.
Yeah. So I don't know if you said this, but where was there one place, like was there a home base geographically right away, like after, or because I heard you mention a bunch of different countries. What
after the Atlantic Council? After yeah. DC?
Or like during that?
Oh, during yeah, that, it was in DC. So yeah. the office like the is like a block away from the White House.
Oh wow.
So also just cool in itself.
Like, oh, was that like yeah.
Cool. I mean, like the bus I took to work each day, like you had to drive by like the Capitol in the mm-hmm. States. So just like, I don't know, sometimes you're looking up from your magazine or whatever and you look up and like there's the United States Capitol. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I like DC in general. But mm-hmm. So it was a block away from the White House. So like during lunchtime, you go out to like one of the squares that's nearby and like mm-hmm. get a sandwich with one of your friends and just go kind of like sit in the little park, Lafayette Square, that's like right above the White House, which it's just cool, you know?
That's awesome.
DC is a neat place, I think, in that regard.
Yeah. Know? So then when was the move to living in Africa permanently? I want to get the whole trajectory
from yeah, yeah,
after
yeah.
college to now.
Sure,
yeah,
like, sure.
Because
yeah.
I know it was about a few different things, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So after the Atlantic Council, I was looking to get abroad again. I wanted to get like
yeah.
on the ground experience doing some kind of like research or economic research, something like that on the ground abroad though.
Mm-hmm.
So I stumbled across the company that I'm working for now. Saw they had a bunch of international positions opening, went through the application process, got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to do like a training assignment first to like mm-hmm. kind of just like learn the ropes of what's expected of me and what I have to do for like ins and outs of day-to-day things.
Right.
So for that, I was sent to Qatar,
yeah.
this tiny country in the Gulf, kind of border Saudi Arabia, very close to Dubai and mm-hmm. Abu Dhabi. So I was there for about 3 months, basically shadowing someone.
Yeah.
3 or 4 months from like September to December. Qatar is a bizarre place, interesting place.
Why is that?
So it's one of these countries that has like a ton of money from gas, but oil and gas, like the same mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it's super, super wealthy,
mm-hmm.
but it's a small country. So there's about like 2.2 roughly million people living there.
Mm-hmm.
But out of those 2.2 million people, only about like 300,000 are actually Qatari.
Oh, wow.
Which is bizarre, right? So like most of the people
like New York City.
It's, yeah, I mean...
Kind of.
Most of the people that are living in Qatar, though, like aren't Qatari. They're
yeah.
like expats that are working there. And it's just like, depending on what your job is, depending on like what position you have in the country, you could probably guess like where you are from in the world. Like, for example, all the taxi drivers were mostly from like India. All like the people in service positions, like working in like a mall or working at like Starbucks or for hotels, were usually from like Southeast Asia, like the Philippines or Indonesia.
Wow.
A lot of the construction workers were like from Nepal. Security guards were from like Africa. So it's just like this bizarre society, you know,
yeah.
where it's like
this giant melting pot.
Yeah, yeah.
Melting pot
in some ways, but also like very like segmented in other ways,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just like a strange place in that regard. But yeah. they have so much money and they're investing lots of money. They won the World Cup, they'll be hosting it in 2020. So they're
yeah,
like
yeah.
investing tons of money in like infrastructure and building stadiums
yeah.
and roads and a metro system. So there's a lot going on, you know?
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
So you're there, that was the first abroad?
So that was, yeah, the first stint with the company. So yeah, after Qatar then.
How long was that?
That was about 3.5-4 months in Qatar.
Yeah. What was it like for the first time being abroad for like an extended period of time? Because like there's that fish out of water aspect where yeah. like, I remember I was talking to Vedavino about this. He lived in India for a while
mm-hmm.
and he was talking to Mustav about like, the whole bullshit going on now with
right.
with Arabs looking
yeah, yeah,
being
yeah.
looked down upon
mm-hmm.
and that whole thing.
Right.
And Vedavino was saying, was empathizing with him, I know what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Like in India, like I experienced that. Like
right.
you don't think like that, like a white kid goes to India.
Right, right.
You're looked upon the same way. Like you're, you know what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
you're a fish out of water. You're different. Like,
yeah.
did you experience any of that? And like
in Qatar,
yeah.
not so much just because
there's
so
many
expats.
Different people.
Yeah, exactly. So many people from different countries.
Yeah.
But like in Nigeria, totally. Like
oh,
just
yeah.
like the color of my skin, you know, like it's, you're immediately, you're singled out in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Was it easily identifiable, you know?
What was the biggest adjustment of living abroad for an extended period of time?
You miss certain things about home, like
yeah,
Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee, things like that, KC bagels in the morning.
But they had Starbucks, right?
Okay. They did have Starbucks in Qatar, that's true. They did have Starbucks in Qatar.
Dunkin' Donuts is better.
Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee in particular.
Yeah.
They didn't have any Dunkin' Donuts. There were Starbucks, but no Dunkin' yeah. Donuts. I don't know. It's a tough question. Like people, though. I miss people, you know,
mm-hmm.
friends, family.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely times when it's like you have a rough week and you want to just kind of like talk to your friends or family or go hang out and disconnect, but you're far away, so you can't always do it too easily.
But nothing in like way of life?
Not so
much. You adjusted to that pretty, or is it?
You find ways, you know, because like soccer, going back to soccer, I feel like is like the world's common denominator. Like no matter where you go, you can find places to play soccer, people that like to watch the English Premier League. You can find people at like Arsenal, like my favorite team, which is great. So I mean, if you like make those connections and like meet a few people that have the same interests as you, I feel like no matter where you are, like, or at least for me, no matter where I've been, you get by, you know. You find like the things that make you tick, like just finding somewhere to play soccer on once or twice a week, and finding a good bar that has like cold beer and English Premier League games, and you find ways to get by.
So 3 months, 3.5 months guitar, then where?
So then January 2015.
October, December?
Yeah, September. That was like September to December of 2014.
Okay.
Then I was home here for 2 weeks or so. And then after that, I went to Jordan in the Middle East.
What was that like?
Jordan was good. I mean, if you look at a map, I think like Jordan looks like it's in a bad neighborhood. Like Syria is right above it. Iraq is to the east. But Jordan itself is pretty stable. But also just like a fascinating place to be. For Jordan, there's this like the big Syrian refugee crisis. So like 1.5 million Syrian refugees have come across the border south to come into Jordan. And Jordan's a small country. It only has like 5-6 million people as it is. So it's like 20% of your population just like all of a sudden comes in, which is, you know, the government doesn't have like the resources and to handle like all these like 1.5 million people coming through. So like for my job there, it's like, what our report does is we try and find like opportunities for foreign investors, for people to come in and invest money. But like the business environment in Jordan, it's pretty tough right now. You know, I mean, they're right next to like a war zone. So that right there is enough to like turn off a lot of foreign investors. But so it was an interesting time to be there. It's not easy, I think, for like the economy that is so close to, you know, these terrible things are going on in Iraq and Syria. But interesting for me, you know, it's still interesting regardless.
Why did you go to a different, like what was?
So you don't have much choice in the beginning. So the reason I went to Qatar is because that's where a lot of our senior staff are. There's a lot of money in Qatar. So I think like people that are working there probably make more money.
So can you explain a little more in depth of, you probably talked about it a little, but the work you're actually doing there?
For sure.
And what was it in Qatar that you're doing? Is it change in Jordan?
So it's all the same. So what my company does is we have offices in different countries, all developing countries or emerging markets kind of. But and in each of these countries, we have an annual report that kind of gives an overview of the economy, like sector by sector. So we have like 15 or 16 different chapters in this annual report that focus on like banking, transportation, real estate, agriculture, energy, like different kind of sectors of the economy. So day to day, what I'm doing is meeting with businesses that are involved in these different sectors. And we're just trying to get their thoughts, asking them about like, how is business for you guys? What are your thoughts on these new regulations that the government is talking about coming out? We're trying to get like a sense of like, what are the big issues? What are the stories that people are talking about in different sectors of the economy? And then so we bring all this information together throughout like the year or so that we're in the country. And then we kind of, we produce this report on an annual basis. So it's...
For what purpose? It's not like a journalism.
No, it's not journalism. We sell it primarily. I mean, we sell it to foreign investors. So multinational corporations that might be interested in like expanding their business into this particular country, banks, embassies will buy.
The way it's, all works.
Exactly. Just like a snapshot of what's going on in this particular country on the economic scene.
What are some of the that's so interesting because I know nothing about that, like what are some of the I mean, like, take a specific sector. What was one of them you said?
So let's go to Nigeria, for example, because that's what I've been doing recently. So Nigeria, like energy chapter, we'll be meeting with like oil companies like Shell and ExxonMobil. And there's also tons of like local like Nigerian companies that are somehow involved in the energy sector. So like oil prices, for example, have dropped like a lot over the past like year or so, year and a half, which means that some of these big like international oil companies are not making as much money as before. So that changes their strategy, maybe not their short-term strategy, but maybe like their medium or long-term strategy of how they want to develop in the particular country, you know? So we'll be asking like a company like Total, for example, like a big like oil company, like, what are your thoughts on lower prices? Do you think that they will stay low? what does this mean for your like medium-term strategy in Nigeria?
Mm-hmm.
Or another example for like the energy chapter in particular is it's called like the Petroleum Industry Bill. It's this big like legislative, big piece of legislation that is that might go through, that might be passed. And if it is passed, like this changes like the tax structures for how much the government gets and how much the international oil company gets from the oil that's sold.
Okay.
So this would be like a really important development for these oil companies, mm-hmm. and also for foreign investors if they're considering coming into Nigeria. So we try and get their sense, like, what are your thoughts on this? What do you think is going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically, we're just trying to collect
so
information.
Fucking cool, dude.
It's a lot though. Like most of the time, I don't know what's going on. I need ask a lot of questions just to get a sense.
Do you have any like personal philosophy about like what's the best way to get? Is there any time where people are like closed off with providing information and you have to like do what I'm doing right now?
A lot of what you do, actually. Yeah. You try, it's an intimate thing, like interviewing someone, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of it comes down to like the ambience you give off. I don't know what it is specifically, but it's like put them at ease, put them in a situation where they're comfortable talking. They might like you, make a joke or something, ask about where they're from or their family or something. And once they warm up to you, at least from my experience, you know, it usually has a better flow of conversation. They give you more information. They'll be honest with you. But we also always like emphasize like all our meetings are like off the record. So like, we're not going to like publish a quote for you unless we get like your approval first.
Yeah.
So, we're not recording it like this, for example.
Yeah. It's okay, right?
This is
I probably should ask you. No, that's why you came here. So all those people know English? Is that...
Yeah, in Qatar, Jordan, and Nigeria, like the business community there, everyone speaks English, especially in Nigeria. Like a lot of people actually studied abroad in like the UK or the US for their undergrad and then came back to Nigeria at some point for like once they finished their studies. So yeah, that hasn't been a problem for work. But outside of work, like Jordan is obviously like, I picked up some Arabic, enough to like get by in like a taxi or enough to like order a coffee, small things like that, ask someone's name.
What were the languages in Qatar and in
Qatar is also Arabic, but even
obviously,
there, like
there's like so many different
right so many people, everybody speaks English. Qataris too, like in the school system, English, you know.
Oh really?
People for certain courses. So that was never an issue in Jordan in terms of work. It's never an issue, but in terms of like, you know, assimilating into the country that you're in and assimilating into the culture, if you know the language, it makes such a difference. You know, it limits me in some way. Like for example, in Jordan, I would get picked up from like a taxi driver and I can ask him a few questions like about what his name and like, how is your family, but I can't like ask him his opinion on a soccer game even, you know, and same in Nigeria too. Most people, everyone for work speaks English, but where I am in Nigeria, at least, like the language is Yoruba, which is super difficult and very foreign to me. And
is it any of the clicking?
No clicking. No clicking in Yoruba. Yeah. At least I haven't heard it yet. I don't know. I'm still listening.
Yeah. Wow. So when you go, you said you didn't have a choice, but when you go from Qatar to Jordan, is it like the kind of thing of like, okay, I understand I have to do this? Or do you develop an attachment to the country that you were in for 3 months and feel like, oh God, now I just have to leave this place that I've been for 3.5 months and start all over again?
Right. That's a good question. For Qatar, I was kind of ready to leave. It's an interesting place, but you know, it's not like a real country in some ways.
Yeah.
Not to be like, I don't know if there's any Qataris listening, but, but for Jordan, I didn't expect it actually. Jordan came as a surprise. Like I wasn't expecting to get posted there and everything, but the country really grew on me. Like Amman itself, the city I was in, is a really cool place. You know, it's a super, super old city.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic food. There's a lot of like
what
fun things,
food?
Like falafel, shawarma.
Shawarma, really?
Yeah.
There's some good places in Paris. And then
are there?
Shawarma. Stav brought me one.
I gotta talk to Stav about food then, because
oh my god,
I bet
you gotta talk to Stav in general.
In general,
but anyway.
Yeah.
So
food in Jordan was super, super good.
Yeah.
Really good desserts too.
Yeah.
Also just like things to do on the weekend. Like it's a beautiful country. Like outside the city, they have what are called like wadis, which are basically like valleys with a small river running through it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these like organized hikes where you can go with like a group of 20, 25 people or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like halfway during the hike, you are swimming and the other half you're like kind of like climbing around this river in the middle of this like pretty large valley. So it's just like a beautiful place.
Wow.
So I was a little reluctant to leave Jordan, but you know, Africa I think still is like my region of interest. Like I'm always particularly interested in Africa, so I was pretty excited about Nigeria.
So Jordan, you're there from January to when?
Till about September.
Oh, wow.
Of this year.
That was longer.
So, yeah, that was longer than guitar.
So you built up a more
relationship. Yeah, for sure. You get to, like, know people better and everything. Mm-hmm. You
know, did you, like, make any, like, friends?
Yeah.
Besides, like, people at work?
Yeah. Most of my friends actually were probably outside of work.
Yeah. Like, people our age or, like, people...
For the most part, in our age, maybe a little bit older. But Jordan... It's like a big hub kind of for like people that work for like humanitarian organizations mm-hmm. that are doing stuff involving like the Syrian refugee crisis or working on like Israeli issues.
Mm-hmm.
So there's tons of like expats like in their mid to late 20s, early 30s that are working in Jordan, working in Amman. Mm-hmm. So there's tons of people that are around my age that I got to meet. Also playing soccer, I feel like was mm-hmm. a great way to meet people. I found a league that played every Wednesday pickup soccer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... 60% Jordanians, 40% expats. So yeah, I made a bunch of good friends. I met a few Americans there that were working for at like the embassy in mm-hmm. Amman, which is pretty interesting work.
Mm-hmm.
I met a guy that is also from California. He was working on like a wind farm there.
Mm-hmm.
I met a girl that worked for the US government. So, I mean, yeah, just like random stuff, but yeah, good group of friends there.
That's awesome. So September to mm-hmm. now,
Nigeria.
You're in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much longer you said when?
I think it's looking like the end of the summer. I'll probably be there till. Wow. So probably like the end of July, maybe August sometime.
What do you foresee like for the next few months in terms of, is it just like the same work like over and over? Does it change?
It does change. So the first like 2 months in particular, I'm just like trying to get my head wrapped around everything that's going on, you know,
yeah.
Like there's like each sector has so many, there's so many things going on that are really important that I need mm-hmm. to kind of like get a grip on so I can, you know, sound somewhat intelligent in these meetings that I'm having
mm-hmm.
and like ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I feel like I've got a decent grip on like what the important issues are. So now it's kind of like delving in a little bit deeper. In particular for Nigeria, this is kind of specific to Nigeria, but there were elections last spring, and then the new president recently announced his like cabinet, like the people that are going to run his different ministries.
Mm-hmm.
So once these ministers are kind of getting settled into their office and figuring out what they're going to prioritize, we need to reach out to them to try and get like the government perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a lot of work because the capital of Nigeria is in Abuja, not Lagos, where I am. So I'll have to go there a few times, I think.
Wow.
So it'll be busy. I think the next like 3-4 months are going to be pretty nonstop yeah. for work, but you know it's good though. I like it.
Yeah. So, one question that I definitely like had prepared was, and this is a little more complicated now because of the different countries you've been in, but if you could generalize, I don't know if you could generalize. You might have to do it per country, but what's the biggest difference between people our age here and people our age there?
Hmm. That's a tough question too.
Are they all focusing on the same things, like in terms of
same problems? I think yeah. you know, like trying to figure it out. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, 21, 22, 23, 24. I think wherever you go, at least wherever I've been, I mean, people mm-hmm. are definitely still trying to figure it out. No one like has a clear
mm-hmm.
like path set in front of them. This is what I'm doing. I mean, some people do. Like same as here though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a tough question.
Day to day, I guess. I guess that would also. Entail what the day-to-day life is like
right for just right anyone. Right yeah yeah
because I was talking to my friend Yara mm-hmm. Farmand, who was Iranian.
Okay.
And I actually interviewed her. I talked about this in an interview and I lost the interview. I was so pissed off, but I'm gonna do it again. And she was talking about the difference between like getting hit on in Iran versus here, and it was like, this probably doesn't pertain to you, but she was talking about how like, or pertain to your country. Well, maybe mm-hmm. Jordan, because, but I don't know. She said that like, there's a guy, she was at like some mart and like a guy would like came up to her and like nudged her. But like, you know, when you like walk past someone, you accidentally like walk into them
yeah.
and you're like, oh, sorry. And you like kind of make physical contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
She said she said he did that again and like placed his like hand on like the small of her back. Like,
wow.
And like, she was like, what's going on here? And then.
Is he hitting on me?
Yeah. And then he said she was like checking out like her food and stuff, and she just like looked to her left, and he was just like on the other side of the room, and he was just looking at her and like put up like a phone sign to like call her, or like meaning like come find me to get my number. So it was like so low key, and
yeah,
I was like
yeah,
that's so fascinating.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That reminds me of a story I've heard. One of my colleagues in Jordan was working in Saudi Arabia before she came to Jordan. And Saudi is a very conservative society. And if you're not part of like the same family, then like females and males like can't intermingle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what they do though, because obviously they're like same as us, you know, people are looking to meet members of the opposite sex and everything. So malls are pretty big there and girls will like hang outside malls and then guys in cars will drive by where they are standing outside the mall and like throw pieces of paper outside the window and like on these pieces of paper have their like phone number.
Yeah.
And that's like the way that you pick up a girl in Saudi.
Oh.
And like hopefully they'll like text you their number or something. Text like just text this random number of this guy just threw at me. Or they'll like post like hold a piece, write down their piece of their number on a piece of paper and like hold it against the window and like just like, you know, thumbs up to the girl if you can see this, text this number.
Yeah.
Desperate though, like I don't know. It sounds brutal.
Is the same reason that they do that? Because the reason she said they do that is because it has to be low key. Because like premarital, everything there is like, is that the same?
Same in Saudi. Yeah. Very religious, very conservative society.
Yeah. She even said like the parties like have to be mad low key. Like, more so than.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it gets super nuts. Yeah, my colleague in Jordan was saying, who lived in Saudi, was saying like she lived in a compound with all expats and people there like just get really drunk because there's not much else to do, you know. It's like you can't really, it's much more restricted way of life. So people will like brew their own beer and brew their own wine and stuff and it's super strong and the parties will get pretty crazy. But interesting though.
Yeah, have you been able to, speaking of romance, have you been able to spend time with some women abroad?
I have.
You don't have to like get into it, obviously. I just wanted to ask you as
for
a friend.
For sure. In Jordan, I met a girl, pretty cool girl. She worked for the US government. She had a pretty neat job. She like goes around to different kind of like spots around the world that need like emergency assistance. So like, for example, like people from her, the same office she works in, will like go to like Liberia when Ebola was like in the midst of the crisis, or they'll go to like the Philippines after a typhoon, things like that. So she was in Jordan same time as I was. She was at the embassy. Cool girl. But you know, we went our different ways. I had to leave for work. She is now, I think, in like, I don't know where she is now. I think she's still in the Middle East somewhere. But interesting though. Cool girl.
Cool. I just wanted to make sure that you had that, because that like kind of goes in with the fish out of water thing.
And I think that's probably one of my biggest complaints about Lagos, you know, in Nigeria where I am right now. Not a bunch of like single young females that are looking to like go work in Lagos. You know, it's like not the easiest place to be. So, so it's nice to be home and, you know.
Yeah. What other aspects of that have been hard?
In general, in terms of the relationship, I think like the nature of my job, it's like, it's pretty transient, you know, I'm only in a country for like 9 to 12 months maximum. So it's hard to like, you know, if you find someone you like I did this girl in Jordan, you know, it's hard to kind of make it last, you know, because I know I have, it's an international position. I don't know where I'm going to be at certain points, like in a year from now. So it's difficult.
Does the innate adventure that goes along with the job you do, you think outweigh the cons of the other thing?
Yeah, I think so. At this point in my life, that's the way I see it. You know, I don't think this is not like the job I want to do for the rest of my life just because it's so like short term. But for right now, I mean, I think definitely it outweighs the cons, the benefits that I'm getting now. But we'll see. I mean, I think this might be my last project with the company. I'm not sure yet what comes next, but for now it's been good.
Yeah. So you said 9 months to the end of the summer.
End of the summer, right.
You said you don't really know.
I don't know for sure.
When you say last project with a company, what does that mean?
I'm looking at different options.
Like different companies?
Different companies, possibly maybe graduate school, I'm thinking.
Oh, wow. What is that?
So I'm looking at different like master's programs for back in the States. Part of the reason, it's nice to be home. Pequannock's a nice place. I miss Casey Bigel. So I think I want to be on the East Coast again for a few years, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at a few programs in like Washington, D.C. and New York City.
Oh, wow.
International relations, international economics, things like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hopefully one of them will work out. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm kind of thinking.
Are you hoping to like, is that definitive that you want to do that, or is you just?
I'm applying, so that's definitive
for the fall.
Yeah. So yeah, the timeline of all this would work out. I'm like applying this winter break. I'd find out probably in like March, April, mm-hmm. and then I would enroll, except the programs all start in like the fall of 2016. So the timing theoretically works out kind of nicely, like finishing up Nigeria, mm-hmm. then maybe back to the States for graduate school, mm-hmm. but don't want to count the chickens before they hatch, yeah. you know?
You've had all these like amazingly unique experiences, and it's just so cool to hear about and amazing to catch up with you and hear about your life. But is there anything that is different than all this that is like something you wish you do someday or like something you want for the future? Do you have any goals or hopes, short term or long term? Are you a type of person that lives day by day? Because you seem like that.
I like to have
the power of now.
Yeah, the power of now is huge, I think. But I am the kind of person that, you know, I like to have a plan. But mm-hmm. long term, I don't know. I'd like to be back in the States for a little bit. After that, I have absolutely no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you never
I want to see Arsenal play. I want to see Arsenal FC play in London. I've never seen them play.
That's Beaudre saw his first game at Man U.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was in the England, his girlfriend's studying over there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. I bet he loved that.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's probably eating that up.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you don't have thoughts of like, do I want to spend my life abroad or do I want to spend my life in America?
So this is something I've thought about, you know, right now, this is something that I also like. My opinion on it changes like every 6 months, I feel like. But right now, at least, yeah. Right now, I don't think I want to live my life abroad, you know? I like the States. I still want to like have international affairs and global affairs like involved in my work, like mm-hmm. very closely, like work on things around the world. But I don't think I want to like live my entire life abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like Washington, D.C. is kind of same with New York City, you know? There's the UN there.
Mm-hmm.
And D.C., like, there's tons of international organizations that have their bases there. So mm-hmm. I think long-term this might change, but you know, live in the States and then mm-hmm. travel a lot for work and for pleasure.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
So what school are you applying to?
So in Washington, D.C., I'm looking at Georgetown, George Washington.
Yeah.
Johns Hopkins has a pretty good program. Oh, that's based in D.C. That mm-hmm. it's called the School for Advanced International Studies.
Yeah.
In New York, I'm applying to Columbia. They have a pretty cool program. And then in Boston, Tufts has a graduate school called the Fletcher School.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably throw an application in there as well.
Do you have a
top choice?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's hard because then it's like you have to favor one city over another.
Yeah. I don't know. This is also something that I change like every like 3-4 weeks. But right now, I mean, I think Columbia would be pretty cool. I think this school, SAIS, the School for Advanced International Studies, the one that's Johns Hopkins in D.C., mm-hmm. would be very, very cool. I don't know, but who knows, you know? I hope I get into one of these programs because they're all, like, awesome, you know? I could see myself really enjoying all of them, mm-hmm. so. But we'll see.
I wanted to ask you about what people, obviously all this bullshit's been going on, mm-hmm. fucking terrorism and mm-hmm. international terrorism.
Yep.
What is the dialogue like over there when that shit happens? Are you able to gauge how the dialogue there is different than it is here in terms of the way people think it should be handled?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, you were in Nigeria when the France thing happened, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like ISIS was still prevalent while you were in Jordan,
right?
Are you able to like gauge the civilians and like what they think about it?
Yeah. I mean, especially in Jordan, start with that. Like ISIS came up in every single conversation I had for work. You know, it's such like a big issue there just because a lot of people like have family in Syria or have like mm-hmm. been to these places where ISIS now controls. So for a lot of people there, it's super personal. And it's like the issue that everyone talks about, you know,
mm-hmm.
Jordan is playing like a pretty important role in like the battle against ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of debate about what Jordan's role should be, if that should change or not, should they be more involved or will becoming more involved make ISIS target Jordan more?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone has opinions on it in Jordan. People follow the news a lot there. So that was for Jordan. For Nigeria, same. I mean, people follow the news very closely. People do have opinions. I think for the most part, it's like me and you, you know, everyone agrees how terrible and terrible it is, but like, what's the best, most effective way to go about, mm-hmm. you know, combating this? for Nigeria, there's like another terrorist organization called Boko Haram in like the northeast of the country. Mm-hmm. So that I think is more pressing for Nigerians than ISIS is. But I don't know. It's a tough spot. You know, it's not only like militarily defeating these people. Mm-hmm. I think you also need to like provide opportunities for, even let's say like you militarily defeat the terrorist organization, mm-hmm. then you need to kind of like provide an environment that allows people to like have jobs after that and mm-hmm. to kind of like have opportunity again. So
fixing not just exterminate, but the system.
Right. The underlying like the structural problems mm-hmm. of like why those organizations, terrorist groups exist in the first place, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, people definitely follow it closely, but it's super pressing, all these issues for mm-hmm. Nigerians and Jordanians in particular.
Do you hear any like Nigerians talk about like the American presidential race and what their thoughts on it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Donald Trump makes headlines anywhere, you know, everywhere.
Oh wow.
People know him. Yeah, he says some crazy things. I don't know. Same in Jordan. It wasn't as big as, like, the race hadn't really got going the extent that it is now. But, yeah, people in Nigeria definitely follow American politics. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What are their views on Americans in general?
Americans in general, I think it's a pretty favorable view.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump says some things, man. He just says some things. I don't know. And it seems like it's
bothering you.
I mean... Yeah, certain things he says, but it comes up a lot, you know, like mm-hmm. with, especially in Nigeria, with like a lot of my group of friends, like mm-hmm. I'm the only American in my like group of five or six friends.
Oh, wow.
So everyone, it always comes up in conversation, you know, so everyone's kind of like looking to get the American's perspective on Donald Trump, you know?
Yeah. What is your perspective?
I don't know. I think it's,
you don't want to say anything.
No, I could say a little bit. I mean, I'm not a fan. I think it kind of like lowers the standard for American politics in general. Like some of the things that he said, like the fact that he's said that like all Muslims should be registered, you know, like mm-hmm. that's something that like happened in like Nazi Germany, like mm-hmm. registering all the Jews, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, but he's still like leading the polls. So like he comes out with all these crazy comments,
having
but he's still,
fears.
Yeah, exactly. I think like in general, you're right. I think Americans are angry. Americans are, you know, scared of what's going on in these places in the world, mm-hmm. like Paris, you know, mm-hmm. and he taps into that, you know, mm-hmm. he gets up there with an angry voice and he's yelling about how terrible things are and how he's going to change them. People don't ask for details, you know, people don't ask for like, well, how is this actually going to happen?
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. You know, people, you know, politics these days, it's all about that like 15-second, you know, sound clip.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump sounds angry and he's great for the news. So the media eats it up.
And then they give him more power.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Yeah. So it just perpetuates itself. But I mean, I don't know. Scary times, but I mean, we'll see what happens in the end, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on him?
Pretty much everything you just said. Mm. And then, yeah, it's the thing that bothers me most is the media. But, like, I understand it from a person who, like, knows how that operates.
Right.
Like, why they're doing it. But at the same time, yeah, we're giving him the power.
Yeah.
And I think he's just generally doesn't really know anything about politics.
Yeah.
Like they're asking him that question about the triad nuclear system and he like didn't even know what it was.
At a loss.
Yeah. Not that I did, but like.
Sure, but you're not running for president. exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, as I was watching with Stav, he was like, wow, he had no idea what that was. Like he knew right away. And I'm like, this is not good. And it's not that's not going to put the nail in the coffin.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't know. I've just been generally scared about everything. I exist and operate through fear. No, I'm like starting to read like the Bible and the Quran because like I'm just like I'm like what the fuck's going on?
All right.
So
yeah,
I just think as a generally fearful person, I understand that he's manipulating people to operate through fear even more, and like it's not fair like at all.
I think manipulating is a good word. Yeah, for that, you know, and I feel like. I feel like it started off as like, Donald Trump's running for president. Let's see how long this lasts. But it's gotten to the point where it's like, it's no longer funny. It's more like alarming, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think he's good for the Republicans either, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, we'll see what happens come in the next few months, you know, with...
If he wins the primary.
I don't know. Then
he's not going to win. The presidency.
I don't think so either, so...
I hope not.
Yeah. But we'll see, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy.
So you go back tomorrow.
I go back tomorrow, yes.
Time's a flight?
Like 4:50, I think.
You gonna watch a movie? How long of a flight is it?
It's about, I think, 11 hours from New York, and then I go to Ghana first, and then Ghana to Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, it's like a, yeah.
Just a short layover in Ghana, but definitely going to watch some movies. Any recommendations?
Well, it depends on what's on the plane, right?
True. Have you seen the new Tarantino movie yet?
Hateful Eight? No, yeah. I heard it's great.
Okay, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Because I saw the Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Big Tarantino.
Would that be on a plane? Probably not.
Probably not, no. Definitely not.
I wonder if it was on a plane. If Mad Max Fury Road's on a plane, did you see that?
I have not. It's good?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, you should watch that.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. But, so, I want to wrap it up. I want to say thank you for coming. Thanks for...
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Can we figure out a way to, like, somewhat communicate more while
often.
You're over there?
Yes.
Are you still... You can use Facebook?
I'm on the internet.
See how you're doing?
For sure.
You don't have a phone that works here.
I don't have a phone that works here.
You were, like, in high school, you were like that, too. You just sort of still had a flip phone.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, yeah.
As long as I could.
You're not a Luddite, but you're...
I'm close to it. No, I'm not a Luddite. I actually do have a smartphone now. I don't know if I've shown you, but I have a smartphone now.
Wow.
But
I'm proud of you.
I know. I had to make the jump once I got this job.
Yeah.
But I don't have like a working number in the States right now. So Facebook is the best way.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this. Thanks for saying the nice words about the show, man.
No, man. I think it's super cool. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Let's end this. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, so I obviously don't think that Donald Trump doesn't know anything about politics. That's a double negative. He obviously knows some things, or he wouldn't be leading the race for the Republican nomination. I guess he really knows a lot about politics, but what I was really saying is that he doesn't know a lot about policy. What I really think is that, in the words of Bill Clinton, he is a master brander, and also he is a master of body language. But yes, knows a lot about politics. This is why I try not to talk about politics, because I don't know what I'm talking about. And then I run the risk of offending someone by hyperbolizing an opinion I have, and then I have to do this. Okay, but anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you to Kevin for sharing your story and coming on the show and talking about what you're doing in life. It was very interesting, I think. Thank you to Stav for helping me out with the intro and talking in the beginning. Thank you to everyone who's listened. Please leave a review on iTunes if you enjoy the show. And thanks again, and I'll see you next week.